Okay, I'll pay $5 to anyone who uses deadass properly in this podcast.
Okay, I that's not really enough to...
I mean, it's more
what
just
about
like,
a gentleman's
it's,
bet?
Yeah, it's more just like the challenge.
Today's word is
deadass. Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. The Nevada caucuses are less than a week away, and Bernie Sanders has opened up a sizable lead over second place Joe Biden, according to our Nevada polling average. So is Sanders a lock in Nevada? We're going to dig into the dynamics of the race there. We're also going to talk about Michael Bloomberg. So today, Tuesday, he qualified for the debate in Nevada later this week. It'll be his first debate. He also officially overtook Biden for second place in our national polling average, although, of course, just barely. He's polling around 17% nationally. So is he a real contender now for the nomination? Here with me to dig into all of that, our editor-in-chief, Nate Silver. How's it going?
It's going well. Good. Enjoying this... It's a relatively slow day before things get really busy again for the next...
Things are going to get crazy.
Yeah.
Also with us, senior politics writer Claire Malone. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, Galen.
Hey. And managing editor Micah Cohen, who, if you're watching this on YouTube, now has a beard.
Suddenly.
He's always had a beard, though.
Well, now has it, a fuller beard.
It appeared a bit quickly, the beard. Suspiciously quickly.
Ooh. What's the... What are we suspicious of?
Beard implants?
Beard implants.
Beard... I got beard implants. Keep it bearded, folks.
3-day weekend, perfect time for a beard implant.
The day...
he also got fillers.
He also got,
everywhere.
I was going to say, lip fillers. The day Micah gets lip fillers is the day we will finally get a bunch of subscribers on
what
YouTube.
What are lip fillers?
I love that you don't know what that
oh
is.
Oh, my God. Have you ever seen any Kardashian?
I've seen the Kardashians,
that's
yes.
That's their face.
It's the defining characteristic of our Instagram and reality TV celebrity culture. Everyone has had lip injections.
Here's the secret. Everyone famous has had a nose job and has some kind of fillers. I just encourage you to Google.
Nate's famous.
I've not had a nose job.
He's clearly had rhinoplasty and lip fillers.
Okay.
Check it out on YouTube. All right. So let's get to it. We're going to get to both Nevada and Bloomberg, but let's kick things off with one of our favorite questions, good use of polling or bad use of polling. So last week, a YouGov poll showed Sanders beating all of his Democratic primary rivals in a head-to-head matchup. He beat Warren by 2 points, Biden by 4, and the rest of the field by double digits. The poll has been used to suggest that even if the more moderate parts of the party were to coalesce around a single candidate, Sanders would still likely win the nomination. So, good use of polling or bad use of polling? Nate.
I have slightly ambivalent feelings about how this poll has been used. On the one hand, as I wrote in the story that I put up this morning, that we put up this morning, there have been a lot of assertions that Bernie Sanders might have a ceiling when I think that's not necessarily clear in the data. He has just about the best favorability ratings in the field, are often tied with the other top candidates, right? You know, the notion of ceilings in general, if you look empirically, is a little bit dubious, a la Trump in 2016.
I don't know. I see one in this room.
I see a ceiling. I mean, ceilings exist, guys. Gravity exists. So on the one hand, I think it's perfectly valid for people to be making this point that, like, actually, Bernie could do just fine in a one-on-one matchup. And actually, he's quite popular with a fairly broad array of Democrats, with the exception of people kind of over the age of 60 or thereabouts. On the other hand, it is one poll. It's a poll that kind of comes at like a, I don't want to say high watermark because Sanders could grow further, obviously. It comes at a time when Sanders is polling pretty well, right? So you might say, okay, you're beating Joe Biden by 2 points or 4 points. What is it, head-to-head, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're also beating Joe Biden by 11 points in this divided field. So that would actually kind of suggest that actually Joe Biden gains ground relative to you when second choices are taken into account. So there are, you know, if you want to get into like the caveats, and there are some caveats, and the old caveat is also like it's only one poll. There have been earlier head-to-head polls that showed
Biden
doing quite well in these head-to-head matchups. But still, I think it's like directionally right for Sanders supporters to be pointing out that like, hey, this ceiling stuff might be just fake.
My curiosity about it is, I mean, I think this primary season is going to be really interesting because just the nature of what states come and like the idea that momentum could be really powerful. To me, this could potentially say people have seen that Sanders did really well in the first couple of states And if we recall the lesson that we learned from 2016, voters tend to like a winner. Or they'll say, like, I don't know, Sanders seems like he's doing well. Maybe I'll vote for him. But then there's so much stuff that's – I feel like we're going to have so many of these different inflection points in the next – 3 weeks even, right? You know, we're seeing Michael Bloomberg in a debate tomorrow. Could that change things, or will he completely flub? You know, like the – because the head-to-head things, like when were those – that the New York Times polling that put Biden beating every, you know, all of his rivals and beating Trump, whatever that was
back in the fall.
Back in the fall, and now we're in mid-February and it's a completely different landscape, and we've got tons of contests, actual voting happening again and again and again. So I found it an interesting poll, but my gut instinct, perhaps informed by 2016, is, oh, well, maybe it's just the winner-winner chicken dinner thing.
Yeah, I mean, and this is one thing that, like, just happens with all polling analysis in general, which is that when a candidate is doing well in the polls or doing poorly conversely, right, it's not hard to find lots of variants of the polls that show them doing well among different subgroups in different states and complementary measures like favorability ratings, right? And the question is, how durable is this and how predictive is this? And so, you know, to some extent, like, that's why I think we're kind of focused on the top line numbers. But again, you know, this notion of Bernie having a ceiling, it still seems like out there in the real world of non-political, you know, experts, it seems like people aren't quite woken up to the fact that Sanders has a really good shot of winning the nomination.
Well, that to me is why it's a good use of polling, is I don't think that the poll was evidence that Sanders is strong above and beyond the fact that Sanders leads in national primary polls with all the candidates. So it doesn't like further strengthen Sanders in my view, but it is evidence that you should start from the place that the person leading in national primary polls or the person leading in most polls is in the best position and not do these like mental gymnastics, some of which were done in 2016, to be like, well, this person is leading, but this and this.
But the question here, though, Micah, the reason people are looking at this poll and saying that it gives us different information than what the national polling tells us is because of this suggestion that Sanders is a factional candidate. And if the more moderate parts of the party were to coalesce around a single person, that person would likely beat Sanders because while Sanders is leading, he's only polling at 24% nationally. So do we think that this poll is enough to debunk that and say Sanders is not a factional candidate? And even if Amy Klobuchar or Pete Buttigieg were the only candidate running against Sanders tomorrow, they would lose.
So I guess my point is, no, I don't think that this poll proves that Sanders is not a factional candidate, but I don't think that's the right starting point. The right starting point should be assume no one's a factional candidate and that you need a lot of evidence to prove that they are a factional candidate. So in other words, to me, this poll jibes with what we would expect of the person leading national polls right now and having a really good moment. As Claire said before, the versions of these polls that we saw when Biden was in front in national polls had Biden beating everybody, right? So it just kind of matches up with that. And I do think it is evidence that you should have to prove that someone is a factional candidate, not that they're not a factional candidate, if that makes sense. The starting assumption should be, okay, this person's not a factional candidate.
And is there any indication that if we're looking for evidence, somebody was trying to prove that Sanders is a factional candidate?
There's lots
of evidence.
There is evidence. I mean, yeah. So this is, you know, in the story this morning, then you can actually find
538.com, all spelled
538.com. So here are things that are not great for Sanders. Number one, in both Iowa and New Hampshire, he did not win a lot of the late deciding vote, which might mean that, like, you kind of have your people and they turn out, but you don't necessarily win undecideds. More relevantly for Nevada, Sanders did not do very well in Iowa with people who have their second choice because they don't have their candidate hit viability, usually 15% in their precinct. His bounces in national polls have not been enormous so far, although we don't really have a ton of post-New Hampshire data at the time we're taping this on Tuesday morning. You know, I mean, look, it's a spectrum, like most things, right? Do I think that Sanders has an above-average amount of resistance? Probably. Does that necessarily matter? Well, he's far enough in an advantageous position where maybe not, and it's probably not absolute resistance, right? And also, like, usually if you have a little bit of upward resistance, you also have downward resistance, which can be helpful. It means that if he eventually has a state where he underperforms, like, let's say that we're going to talk about Nevada in a moment. Let's say he loses Nevada to, I don't know who, you can take your pick of any other candidates, right? Tom Steyer, Pete Buttigieg, or Amy Klobuchar, Joe Biden, or whomever, Elizabeth Warren, right? I think his people would probably stick with him and would say, oh, it's a weird state, and he's won 1.5 the first two states, and it's fine, right? And his people were very loyal, like, to Bernie when he had a heart attack and when Warren was surging. Those are things that I think a lot of candidates would have been done in by that, and his
so
folks stuck with him.
So a high floor. Let's move on and talk about Nevada, but how should we categorize this? You are ambivalent use of polling. Micah is good use of polling.
Good use.
Claire?
Sure.
Good use of
it's
polling.
It's informative.
Informative. Yeah.
It's
good.
Interesting. It's food for thought.
All right. That has been rated a good use of polling. Thank you, YouGov. So let's talk about the state of the race in Nevada. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by Casper. Say hello to Casper, the sleep company with outrageously comfortable products that help everyone sleep and live better. Their ultimate goal is a world well slept. From award-winning mattresses to pillows, bedding, and furniture, Casper is transforming the way we sleep. With over 50,000 five-star reviews, it's the most loved and trusted sleep company. So don't lose sleep over finding the perfect bed. The four layers of premium foam are designed to provide pressure relief for all night comfort. Zone Support is designed to provide extra support to keep your back aligned. Get the mattress of your dreams today. Go to Casper.com/politics and use code politics for $100 towards the purchase of select mattresses. That's Casper.com/politics, code politics, to get $100 towards the purchase of select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. See Casper.com/terms. Customer experience and product reviews are based on Casper.com, authorized retailer sites, and Google. The Nevada caucuses are this coming Saturday, and although we had basically no Nevada polling for a while, we do now have some new polls there. Our current average shows Sanders leading at 26%, then Biden at 15%, Warren and Buttigieg are at 11%, and then Steyer, Bloomberg, and Klobuchar are not that far behind Warren and Buttigieg. So, Claire, according to Politico, a number of campaigns have said that the competition is really for second place at this point. Sanders has a lock on first in Nevada. Is that a fair characterization of the race in Nevada?
I think it still kind of remains to be seen. If you're a longtime listener of this podcast, you'll know that we are skeptical about Nevada polling somewhat. So I think we're a little bit, or I won't speak for the rest of the panelists.
Speak for me.
I'll speak for you. Yeah. I'm a little hazy about what exactly is up and what's down in Nevada. I certainly think Sanders is a strong candidate, and his campaign has been pouring a lot of resources into the Latino community. The big hiccup is the Culinary Union, which wields quite a bit of power in Nevada because Nevada is a caucus state and because, unlike Iowa, no one in Nevada really knows that there's a caucus going on. So the people that the Culinary Union turns out in an organized fashion to vote on caucus day are, that's important. That's an important block of voters. The Culinary Union has been putting out material that's very anti-Medicare for All, basically. It's basically like an anti-Bernie Sanders thing without explicitly saying don't vote for Bernie Sanders. So I'm kind of curious about how that'll tilt things. Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically what I'd say. It's a really interesting, you know, it's almost an old school dynamic of, you know, smoke filled rooms, except it's a, you know, the ballroom of a casino where a very powerful political bloc wields a lot of power in an important state. So I'm really interested to see how that shakes out.
Yeah. The idea that, first of all, we're in general 538 skeptical of locks anywhere at any time, right? That's not really the best way to think about elections. But the idea that anybody is a lock in Nevada, which, as Claire said, has bad polling historically, in a caucus, in a primary, is silly. And the article that framed it this way, which was based entirely on what rival campaigns were telling the reporter,
trying to lower expectations.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, are you kidding me?
This has actually happened. let me do a sidebar on media criticism. I've had conversations with friends over the past week about a couple of stories. I'm not going to name any names explicitly, but like stories that have come out where you're just like, you just talked to like campaign operatives who obviously have a vested motivation. You haven't like indicated anywhere that you know that that's the motivation. I know that's like some of political journalism, but Jesus Christ, like a little dignity here, people. On a more like Nevada focused thing, the thing I think is really interesting about the culinary union's anti-Sanders, anti-Medicare for All bid is I actually think it tugs at these two strings within the support or the persona of Bernie Sanders. One is he's actually quite appealing to a union man, right, or a union woman. He's appealing to that union mentality. Friend of the working man, down with the billionaires, that stuff. But on the other hand, there's this strain in unions that is extremely establishment, extremely Democratic Party, straight and narrow. And so I can kind of see, you know, almost culturally, Sanders really appealing to union people because he has that kind of dynamic. But on the other hand, oh, you're tugging and you're saying, well, maybe I should vote for Biden, who also kind of has that background of like, or whomever it is. But I actually find it kind of this really specific to Sanders interesting dilemma for people, right? Sanders supporters. And that's why I'm really curious about what the Nevada outcome will be.
Well, and we saw that even in the 2016 general, right? That same contrast where, of course, Hillary Clinton is running on the Democratic Party's ticket and historically unions support Democrats, but culturally, Trump ended up being a good fit for plenty of union households in the upper Midwest. Go ahead, Micah.
That's right. And sorry, this is jumping around a bit, but just to complete the thought about why Sanders is not a lock in Nevada beyond the polls there, beyond the general difficulty of polling caucuses, is, you know, the culinary union thing is not incidental, right? You have the most powerful political machine there. They haven't endorsed anybody, but they're clearly working at cross purposes with Sanders, right? Our model has Sanders, I think, as a 2-3 with a 2-3 chance of winning Nevada. That seems about right to me. You know, that he's a modest favorite. But 1 out of 3 times, you know, somebody else wins there.
Well, what is true is there's no clear exactly number two. I mean, I think it is probably Biden. But like the polls are all over the place. So you had a poll come out from WPA Intelligence that had Sanders up 25-18 over Biden. You have a poll from Data for Progress, which is a liberal organization but did good polling in Iowa and New Hampshire, that had Sanders up much larger, 35% to Warren, Buttigieg, and Biden, all at about 15. You have a poll from something called Point Blank Political, which is not a firm I have heard of. It's a tiny sample. It had Tom Steyer first, Amy Klobuchar second, and Sanders tied for fourth. I don't know if I believe that poll. And then you have a Tom Steyer internal poll that shows, not surprisingly, Tom Steyer in a strong third place at 18%, Biden at 19, Bernie Sanders at 24. And you have also, I think, a Telemundo poll of Latino voters that showed their big disputes over how dominant Bernie is among Hispanic voters. And so it's kind of a big mess. Maybe more importantly, there is a debate taking place tomorrow.
What?
And
we'll be right back here, folks, Wednesday night.
It's maybe going to be overshadowed by the Bloomberg's debut in a debate, but like
Miguel Blumbito.
But let's not forget.
By the way, that's a joke about his time as mayor in New York.
It's a Twitter account. Sorry, yeah, it's a Twitter account that because it's a specific New York City reference.
He would speak in Spanish often, in poorly accented Spanish.
Yeah.
I think during Hurricane Sandy, it became kind of a bit of a joke. I don't know.
Yeah. El Blumbito is the Twitter account.
Anyway, but like, in New Hampshire, we have a recent example of the debate mattering and boosting Klobuchar and probably Buttigieg a little bit too, and Bernie, and really hurting Biden and Warren. And, you know, I mean, the question is like, if Bernie is at 35%, like in the Data for Progress poll, then he's going to win, probably, in all probability. If he's at 25%.
That came out like really strongly, and then you kind of couched it a little bit.
It's like the woman drinking kombucha or whatever. If
yeah, kombucha girl. Definitely. No. Maybe. Definitely.
That's my reaction to the entire primary, pretty much. If he's at 25%, like in the WPA intelligence poll, or 24%, like in the Steyer poll, then someone can catch him.
So we've mentioned a couple times that polling in Nevada is tricky. We haven't said exactly why. Like, polling any caucus is hard because of second choices and turnout is low, so you're not always sure who's actually going to turn out. And in a primary in general, people are more liable to switch candidates because they're all Democrats anyway, so it's easy to switch back and forth. We've established that in the past. Why specifically is it difficult to poll Nevada?
It's hard to poll Nevada. Nevada?
Nevada. We've actually gotten some comments.
Leave it alone, Nevada. Nevadans.
Although, to be fair, the state is named after the Sierra Nevadas, which it's pronounced Nevada.
You know, people pronounce different things different ways. Who cares?
Yeah, you know the city in New Hampshire named spelled Berlin? How do you think it's pronounced?
They say it Berlin because there's also one in Wisconsin where they pronounce it Berlin.
Right, because it's not like it's not up to the original pronunciation. It's up to the locals to decide how they want to pronounce the goddamn
Nevada
word.
Nevada, you win.
Des Moines.
I love visiting Houston, Texas.
So you know that poll Nate mentioned and that had Steyer leading? It's from Point Blank Political, which, like Nate said, I don't think we had ever heard of before. Want to hear their slogan?
I'm reading it off your computer.
Point Blank Political, among the top political consulting firms.
That sounds fake.
Among really?
When was it incorporated?
Among
was it incorporated in January of 2020?
Maybe we should look into
Why did we include this poll in our averages if we don't even know that it's real?
I think you're wrong, Micah. There's no reason to think it's fake. There's a reason to think it's bad. There's not a reason to think it's fake.
Fair enough. Okay, but so to the original question, Micah's giving side eye.
Dead ass.
Well, I just want to look into it. Like dead ass.
Do I get $5?
No, that's not good. You got to work it into the in segment part. Okay, it is hard to poll the state because there are a lot of people who will caucus there who don't speak English. Conducting polling in Spanish costs more money. A lot of these polling firms, a lot of the media outlets doing polling.
It's a transient state.
Are strapped for cash. It's a very transient state. You have people moving in and out, moving within the state. I think it's a relatively young state. That's right, right?
It's
the Hispanic population is relatively young, but not overall. I just actually looked this up.
Okay,
it's about
the
median age when it comes
to group,
the country as a whole.
That group is hard to reach, not only because they're many of them speak only Spanish, but also because they're really young, and young people in general are harder to poll.
And you have early voting this year.
Yeah, first time.
Which I think should boost turnout a lot and makes it kind of like almost like this primary grafted onto a caucus. And in the caucus, you have reallocations. So you can, again, if you don't get 15% in your precinct, then you have to go to your second choice. However, the early ballots also have ranked choice voting, which is kind of a version of that process. And I'm actually not quite sure how it all, like I said, grafts on to another. You have also some precincts that are very large, literally in the basements or the ballrooms of casinos where you might have actual union pressure. I don't know, but I don't mean to accuse anyone of anything, right? But you know, it's not a private ballot. And that's probably more relevant even in Nevada than it is in Iowa. And so at the same time, like, look, demographically, you would think that a lot of this lines up pretty well for Bernie Sanders. He clearly has some strength among Hispanics, this kind of working class demographic that's like working class, not like kind of lower class, but like working class. Like, and there are a lot of working class jobs in Nevada. Feels very good for Sanders. It's a big union state. He generally polls better out west than out east. It's a caucus. Just everything would seem like it lines up pretty well for Sanders. So you're right that if you like are just looking at the polls, and A, the polls don't agree, and B, the polls have a huge margin of error, so the polls might not make you that confident of any outcome. But if you default to, and yeah, I should, you know, cast some shade at this reporting, which other candidates want to lower expectations in a state where expectations are always weird. But based on your priors demographically, you would think that Sanders leads nationally, and this is an above average state for him, it's not an obviously strong state for any other candidate.
A random question about caucuses. Do we think they're anti-democratic on some level because of the lack of the private ballot?
For sure.
I think they're more anti-democratic because of the way that they exclude people who work at night, people who are handicapped or can't make it, also just having, you know, 2 hours of time to commit.
And I ask this because the early voting part of the Nevada caucus is kind of an interesting, like, weird innovation for a caucus system. I don't know exactly how it works, but I could see complications.
So what they do is they assign your early vote to a precinct,
right,
and then just add that to the tally on caucus night.
Jeez, these caucuses, like Oklahoma, I guess will face this too, but to a lesser degree. Should these exist?
But that, But that's kind of the point.
I mean, it's hard to imagine that not getting screwed up, the adding the early ballots.
Yeah.
And they also just changed how they're tallying all of this. They switched to a Google spreadsheet instead of the app that they used in Iowa.
Yeah.
And there have been reports from people who've gotten training on this Google spreadsheet that there are people, you know, who are going to be tallying this at precincts who don't even necessarily know how to use the iPad. Anyway.
Well, that's kind of the point, right? Is there are, if you were just looking at this polling average and you knew it was a caucus, you would say, oh, Sanders is a modest favorite. But this is still, you know, nothing is locked up here, right? Once you add in all the specific, okay, they're trying all this stuff for the first time with early voting. They had to change their process at the last minute after the Iowa mess, right? Nevada's a hard state to poll to begin with. Then the idea that, you know, this political piece calling, you know, describing the race as like Sanders has first sewn up. Now it's just a race for second and third. It's just so weird and silly, and it's nobody should be shocked. It would be a mild surprise if somebody else won Nevada besides Sanders. It wouldn't be shocking by any means.
Well, I think part of the shock would just be, since there's no clear second, it would be, oh, wow, how did that person consolidate the vote around them as second place?
So I think that's totally right, and Nate, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm not sure, like, empirically things actually behave this way, but the way I look at it, though, is the fact that there's no clear second place candidate right now both makes it more likely that Sanders will win because there's the chance nobody breaks out. But it also makes it less likely in the sense that this was kind of what was going on in New Hampshire, right, that we talked about on the podcast, where you had all these candidates, Biden, Warren, Klobuchar, who were hanging around like low double digits, right, 10, 11, 12%. And a lot of voters go into a primary caucus and say, I don't want to waste my vote on someone who might not even qualify for delegates,
yeah,
let alone doesn't have a chance to win. So it's just, this is why primaries are so fluid. You could see all these, you know, you could see Warren supporters at the last minute go, screw this, you know, let's flock to Sanders or to Buttigieg.
Well,
right?
So if we're talking about the lack of clarity in who's leading, who's in second place, blah, blah, blah. And if we're talking about the way that the media is filling in the vacuum, see Politico article about, oh, it's a race for second place. Here are the headlines on the New York Times politics section today. We got one about Trump. We have Michael Bloomberg leans left with plan to rein in Wall Street. On politics, Bloomberg's in the debate. Something about the Correspondents' Dinner. Michael Bloomberg surges in poll and qualifies for Democratic debate. Something about Warren trying to regain the spotlight. Something about reality winner. Bloomberg campaign opens first attack on Democratic rival Bernie Sanders. Something about John Bolton. Blah, blah. But, like, there's a lot of Bloomberg stuff in there, and it's all this stuff. Bloomberg under the microscope.
Well,
like, it's very much, to me, there is this, when there is a lack of clarity about who is there, it's like, everyone's like, all right, what's the next thing? It's Michael Bloomberg.
But this is whatever. But this is why.
I'm going to tweet about that as we speak.
Dead ass. Let's not go after the Times again. But this is why the lack of a clear second place person might help Sanders, because the person getting the media bump right now isn't on the ballot in Nevada.
So or South Carolina.
Or South Carolina. So it's like, you know, you could imagine an alternate universe where Klobuchar is really getting all this Bloomberg attention.
Right.
Right. And then she's, you know, she's not a perfect fit for Nevada, but, like, she's at least on the ballot. That's helpful.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, I should say, like, he has like 2 weeks until he's actually on. He is on Super Tuesday ballots. So on March 3rd, people will be able to vote for Mike Bloomberg. But I got to say, I mean, again, it's February 18th. Who knows what's going to happen? But Joe Biden's weird collapse really does make Bloomberg currently look very prescient, or we're all just buying into the Bloomberg hype, both of which are
all right
possible.
Speaking of which, Bloomberg is our next segment, which I think we've already kind of started and we'll continue it. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by ADT Commercial for Business. It's not politics as usual these days, and it's not business as usual at ADT. ADT Commercial serves businesses ranging from mid-sized organizations to large-scale enterprises. Think of them as national security advisors just for your company. They provide comprehensive security, fire, life safety, and risk management solutions. Professional-grade systems for commercial-grade businesses. Businesses choose ADT Commercial. The Fortune 1000 trust ADT Commercial for highly complex, scalable, integrated solutions. And if you're looking for a great partner to upgrade or take over the monitoring and service of your current system, ADT Commercial can help to install and maintain large-scale and multi-site business dependably. Businesses choose ADT Commercial for their complex security solutions. Visit ADT.com/538 to learn more. Again, that's ADT.com/538, the numbers, not the letters. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Upstart. Getting into debt is easy, but getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. And the best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards and meet their financial goals. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/politics to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. Again, that's upstart.com/politics. All right. As I mentioned earlier, Bloomberg will be on the Democratic primary debate stage for the first time on Wednesday. He also just barely overtook Biden for second place in our national polling average. He's at 16.5% and Biden is at 16.4%. So they're tied for all intents and purposes. We haven't had a big Bloomberg segment yet. So let's talk about him.
So this is it.
This is it. Nate, where is Bloomberg support coming from?
It's coming from different places. It's coming from
hashtag analysis.
It's coming from people who are authentically quite moderate. That's one group, right? It's coming from people who I think are looking for an alternative to the left wing of the party and maybe were into Joe Biden before and now are using Bloomberg kind of as a way to park their vote instead. And there's probably some that is truly just kind of name recognition driven based on his unprecedented ad spending. So I think it's kind of a mix of like fairly sincere support of people who are excited by his rise in the polls and of people who are gravitating toward him because of name recognition and may or may not turn out to vote.
I have to say, I have been genuinely surprised by Bloomberg's rise in the polls. I did not see this coming.
Is it the result of a bunch of money being spent? Like, what do you chalk it up to?
No. He is. I mean, it is. Like, I think.
Yes.
He's
in
on
part.
I think we can't underestimate how much he's on the airwaves in certain states. And I watched the Super Bowl. I watched the end of the Super Bowl. Not the whole thing. His ads were good. He's not in them, which is maybe.
No, the one with. Like,
See, I think this is like halfway to being a myth. Obviously, it's nice to be running as many ads, and it is truly ubiquitous where, you know, I was at the NBA All-Star game in Chicago this weekend and, like, taking a cab back, and my texter was listening to, like, a, you know, predominantly black radio station. There's this ad with Bloomberg about, like, how he's been great for the African-American community, right? And it's kind of going uncontested on that station. But the pattern of Bloomberg's rise in the polling does not fit a slow burn from advertising, right? He goes from kind of 4% to 9% before Iowa, and then after Iowa, he goes from 9 to 17.
Well, it's
that is a sudden earned media-driven surge. And as you point out, Claire, like he is the dominant topic of conversation in the political press right now, even though you've had other candidates who have had, you know, namely Bernie and Buttigieg most prominently, who have had very good results so far, right?
It's like he's replaced Biden in the front-runner talk almost.
Yeah.
Even though obviously I know he's not a front-runner.
Right.
For all the people who are going to write in and tell me that.
We should talk about that. But let me just push back on Nate a little bit. Nate, I totally agree that Bloomberg has seemed to benefit very clearly from a post-Iowa surge in media coverage, no doubt in large part because of Biden's disappointing finish in Iowa and New Hampshire, which I think sort of set the narrative table for the media to focus on another, quote, moderate lane candidate. But Bloomberg, even before then, I think had a pretty steady rise from whatever, you know, 2-3. Before Iowa, he had climbed into the high single digits. So there's more of a steady rise. But even more than that, I think the money is important to get the media to pay attention, right? To get the media to take him seriously.
I think that denies too much agency the fact that, again, people have completely forgotten about these candidates who have done better than Bloomberg.
But Nate,
here's what it is, in my view. He is spending an insane amount of money. We should stipulate that and give credit. He's like, you know, I'm looking at a political piece that's talking about how the amount of money and the widespread existence of Bloomberg ads has completely changed, like, the marketplace on local TV stations for ads. That's nutty. But of course, the national media, largely based in New York City, who, like, knows Mike Bloomberg, you know, as for some of us, all of us here at this table who live in New York City, you know, he's a former mayor. He's this big figure. He always kind of flirts with running for president. He, you know, every town for gun safety has become kind of a big Democratic. I mean, it's not technically Democratic, but, you know, it's a gun control philanthropy that's become a pretty big media actor. He spent a ton of money in the 2018 midterms. I think there's a lot of, like, media being primed because Bloomberg kind of always there in the background. Whereas, you know, someone like Tom Steyer is a bit of like a, no offense, Tom, like a little bit of a rando, right? Who people find, like, inoffensive. But Bloomberg has this sustained, I've got a lot of money, I've pledged I'm going to spend it, and here it is, all of a sudden.
And he plays into both kind of classic media biases, which is, one, the kind of provincialism around New York, and two is, like, probably if you survey the average, if you took a weighted average of the average person producing news, their political views would come out very close to Bloomberg, probably closer than any other candidate.
Who endorsed him this weekend? Sam Donaldson.
Our ABC News colleague, I guess.
Former?
Sam Donaldson.
Former, yeah.
I believe he's retired.
So, for all that, though, right, you're saying that he plays into maybe the media's weaknesses or predilections or whatever. When you look in the crosstabs of these polls, so I'm looking at a Marist poll, which is highly rated according to 538, and it shows Bloomberg coming in second. The places where he's performing well, for example, he performs well with rural voters. Of course, he's leading with moderate voters specifically, also performs pretty well with African-American voters. He's in third there. He performs well with older voters, with white non-college graduates. So this is not
he's performing,
so far.
Well, he's performing well with people who watch a lot of TV.
Okay, but I also think that there's...
Is that what that
which
is?
Which would seem to argue that all those advertisements are having some effect.
I also think
or
that...
Or the media.
I mean, fact that the Biden vote is going to Bloomberg instead of to Buttigieg or Klobuchar...
It's weird.
But it's actually not that weird because the entire narrative surrounding... Let's take Buttigieg first. The entire narrative surrounding Buttigieg is, oh, no black support, right? And then immediately, you know, his chances fall off a cliff after New Hampshire. So I think people who consume media say, okay, this guy doesn't have a chance. Klobuchar still has a name recognition problem, frankly. And, like, even though she, you know, I heard this is, I think this is from an NPR show. I was talking to someone this weekend who said that someone on an NPR show described Klobuchar as, before the New Hampshire primary, as Brussels sprouts. And now she's Brussels sprouts with bacon, which I think is kind of an amazing description. Whoever said it, good job. But, like, you know, people are kind of like, eh. Whereas Bloomberg is, he's also, frankly, getting a lot of attention for baiting Trump, right? Which Democratic voters love to see. I mean, they do. Like, if the entire Democratic contest is essentially this, if you step back, like, this insane thing about, like, who will do well with Trump on the general election debate stage? It's like, who will do well on four nights of primetime TV? You know, who will mop the floor with Trump? Bloomberg being like, oh, well, we measure height from the neck up where I come from. Like, people are like, ooh, burn. So there is some of that kind of, like, people pick up on that thing and they're kind of like, okay, like maybe Amy Klobuchar wouldn't do that. Maybe Pete Buttigieg wouldn't do that, but Mike Bloomberg would. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, so I want to come back to this because, right, what I've described is somewhat Bloomberg taking Biden voters, rural voters, non-college educated white voters, ranking third now behind Biden and Sanders with African-American voters, older voters. Is it really just TV, or is there something about his policies, his message, et cetera, that is attracting a certain type of voter?
I mean, there are the policies he articulates right now, kind of via his commercials. He's not done, I think, a lot of policy work per se in the campaign. And there his track record, which is actually quite conservative, right, relative to a Democratic primary electorate. You know, I mean, I guess it's, we haven't even gotten into this, and it's kind of like maybe not the most foregrounded issue right now because it's kind of this media and advertising driven surge. But you know, he would be unusually centrist for a nominee in either party. And people kind of intuit, we might say there's evidence for this to some degree, that like if you're more moderate, then you tend to do better in head-to-head polling versus Trump. He's also just kind of like mind-melded, though, people into thinking, oh, this guy must be really good against Trump, when I don't think it's necessarily so clear from the polling data. He is not someone who screams electability, right? He's not some twangy, you know, good-looking 52-year-old senator from...
like Democrat who's won a statewide election in a reddish state.
Yeah, he's not a John Edwards. That seems like a bad comparison now, right? Or a Steve Bullock, or even a Klobuchar who has this kind of track record, right? He is someone who might have trouble gaining support from African-Americans and Hispanics in the general election. I mean, if you talk to African-Americans and Hispanics in New York City, they would have very mixed impressions, probably leaning a bit toward the negative side for Bloomberg. And he's someone who, like, you know, you can even see, like, the pro-Bernie people on Twitter who, okay, let's be honest, are not averse to, like, you know, being pugnacious, right? You even see the people saying, we're not bluffing this time. You're right that we have been against Buttigieg and Biden, whatever else, but Bloomberg is really a bridge too far for us. And I think there's some truth to that, maybe.
I mean, Elizabeth Warren was a bridge too far for them, too.
They're kind of like self-awarely saying, like, we know that we've lost credibility on this, but just trust me that Bloomberg is like a.
I think some of the reasons why it's hard to gauge how this is all going to play out are twofold. One, I think part of Bloomberg's appeal is kind of what was at the heart of Biden's appeal with white moderates, with black voters, was that he was appealing to the anti-PC sentiment, right? Michael Bloomberg has a long history of saying, let's just take it like he tells like bawdy jokes, right? Sexist jokes. He's accused of saying some pretty gross, lewd things. People might be like, cool, he's just talking like how people talk about this stuff, like whatever, we'll give him a mulligan on some of the worst stuff, blah, blah, blah. Biden kind of had an appeal because people said, well, he'll talk to Trump voters about race and Me Too stuff in a way that isn't lecturing, that's kind of meeting them where they are. The problem with Bloomberg is once you start talking about stop and frisk, you can run into with black voters people being like, yikes, that was pretty bad, wasn't it? And you, Michael Bloomberg, were pretty recently still defending stop and frisk.
In 2015.
Right. So it's like maybe he picks up black support, you know, by being like, okay, I'm a kind of white candidate who, like, in the general election, Trump voters will actually, like, kind of be like, yeah, okay, I'm picking up what this guy's putting down, therefore making me quote unquote electable. Or people will be like, hell no, stop and frisk was really damaging. And I can't, like, I actually can't tell which way it's going to pan out once people actually get to know him. He hasn't been on a debate stage yet. He'll be on a debate stage tomorrow night. He's not actually, like, he doesn't talk that much in his commercial. I mean, he does, but it's not like, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure how much people actually know Mike Bloomberg.
No, I'm not sure they do at all. I mean, not to put too fine a point on this, but this entire Bloomberg surge is media created, earned media, paid media, whatever, right? There hasn't actually been, this is like the one redeeming quality of Iowa and New Hampshire, right, is like the retail politics part. Not only has Bloomberg not done that, he hasn't been in debate, as Claire said, even in his commercials, they don't actually feature him all that much. It's sort of like, look, I think we learned in 2016, we further learned that in modern elections, it's the packaging that matters. It doesn't matter so much what's inside the packaging, right? Trump had flipped this way and that on every single issue. It didn't really matter. It was about the packaging. How far can the Bloomberg campaign get on really good, well-paid-for packaging? You know, there's a chance pretty far. I think for what it's worth also, though, there's also a chance that we look back at this as a, you know, spike in what are those called? And bust cycle.
So
like, that could happen too.
Yeah. So let's talk about like from a kind of model almost point of view. We had model talk, right? But think about like what are the things that makes Bloomberg unusual? And I guess the most obvious one is the money. But the second one is like starting late and not competing in these first four states, and often not competing is a euphemism for I'm going to lose these states, so therefore I'm going to pretend they weren't important. In Bloomberg's case, it was a bit more ambivalent. He was like not literally on the ballot. In three of the first four, Iowa has no ballot per se, so there actually were a few Bloomberg voters, right? But kind of the idea, it's like the way these two things intersect. Ordinarily, you have to compete in the first four states because that is a way that you get media attention and become viable in latter states, right? He clearly like seems not to have needed that. You know, at the same time, one wonders if things had been slightly different, where if Iowa had declared Pete Buttigieg the winner on election night, right? And then that small additional boost he gets makes him win New Hampshire, right? Then the story might be, hey, is Buttigieg displacing Biden as the moderate alternative? And then, I don't know, right? Bloomberg might not get as much coverage, so it's also been kind of a nice coincidence of events. But I don't know. I mean, look, on the one hand, like, I don't want to, like, put too much weight on the skeptical Bloomberg side. We already put a lot of that weight, at least me personally, kind of early in the race. And clearly, like, he has found a way to become a serious contender for the nomination. And his people are very smart. I mean, you know, people talk about, like, okay, well, the Trump people are Trump has good instincts. He understands the New York media. I tell you what, the Bloomberg people really do understand the New York media. They're a part of it, right? And they're kind of speaking to, like, their peers. And they are very good at that, and they deserve a lot of credit for getting, even if he does terribly in tomorrow's debate and flames out, the Bloomberg people, you can quote me on this, deserve a lot of credit for kind of seeing this path and getting him this far.
So that's kind of describing maybe where he overperformed, where we underrated his chances looking in the past. Just kind of wrapping things up with Bloomberg. Right now, the model gives Bloomberg an 8% chance of winning the majority of delegates in the Democratic primary.
And a 16% chance, I think, of getting 17. The plurality.
17, actually?
So there's a big gap in his case between the majority and the plurality cases.
So that's still a smaller chance than Biden, according to the model, of winning a majority. Do you think that in this moment, the model is still underrating his chances, or has it caught up to, you know, where it should be at this point?
I don't think there's any particular reason to think that now that the model is underrating his chances. If you were to account for more subjective factors, and you might say, okay, well, what happens when he actually gets scrutiny now from the press? These debates could be a liability for him. The model doesn't account for any of that. And by the way, the model actually does give Bloomberg some credit for, number one, the fact that he has this money, and number two, the fact he's gotten a lot of endorsements, right? So it takes this prior, and it has not that much effect, frankly, but like it actually thinks of him as being like maybe the strongest kind of candidate on the basis of the fundamentals, so-called, right now, stronger than Sanders. So
he's third right now in endorsements to Biden and Warren.
He's third, but if you look at – so the model uses
– another way that the money might time, be helping
him. Time-weighted endorsements, right? So it looks like who have you gotten endorsements from recently? And on that metric, Biden has almost fallen into a tie with Bloomberg based on recent endorsements. So not – you know, there are some assumptions the model makes that are reasonably favorable for Bloomberg, but look – the reason why Biden is priced a little bit higher in the model is there is still a chance, a real chance, not like anything could happen chance, that Biden wins South Carolina, that South Carolina gets him a media boost heading into Super Tuesday. People have sold so short on Biden that like even like a 4-point win in South Carolina might be portrayed as being a big comeback, right? He's also second on average in Nevada polls. So he's like actually not.
When he's still tied for second now with Bloomberg in national polls. Like Biden has held up relatively well, given how poorly he did in Iowa and New Hampshire. Can I interrupt with some breaking news?
Yeah.
ABC News has learned that President Trump is expected to commute the sentence of former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich via multiple senior level sources.
It's a big deal.
I thought it was going to be bigger breaking news, Micah. I thought it was going to be like...
What was his line? This is f***ing valuable, or like...
The Senate seat line?
Yeah.
He was like, I'm not going to give this away. This is, yeah, this is my golden ticket.
Okay, to wrap things up on Bloomberg, and then we'll end this podcast. Claire and Micah, do you agree, disagree? Does 8% seem like where you expect Bloomberg's chances of winning a majority of delegates to be?
Seemed about right to me.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just, when the endorsement thing was pointed out, I'm going back and looking at the endorsements that have been made. I mean, it's an astounding number of endorsements that have been picked up lately. Some former, like some Congressional Black Caucus, former Kamala Harris endorsing people like Bobby Rush. You know, I don't know. Yeah. Like, it's not nothing. To me, he's kind of like taking the establishment
baton
a little bit.
He has a, according to the model, 17% chance of winning the most delegates, winning a plurality. So, yeah. The model is actually relatively high on him. I don't know. You know, if I think Bloomberg could pull this thing off where he is sold to voters as, you know, for all intents and purposes, Biden, like the safe, moderate, electable alternative. Is Bloomberg actually that candidate, like in substance? I don't really think so. Like, you know, this is someone who tried to ban big sodas. I think the country overall would have a problem with a candidate like that.
He could upset like different factions of people in different ways, but also please them in different ways too.
It would be interesting, but my point is maybe none of that matters. Maybe it's just like, do you run a campaign that has clear messaging, and that messaging doesn't have to connect to reality?
It's like it's like America's birthday, and they've gone to Baskin Robbins and they're trying all the flavors, and like Bloomberg is just one of them.
Yeah, no, exactly right. That's the thing, is like, actually, if I had a bet right now, I think I'd bet on a boom and bust cycle for Bloomberg, where he gets all this attention and then gets – the campaigns are signaling that they're like going to go after him.
Yeah. Let's see what people think of him. Yeah.
Well, we'll be back.
He's got some problems.
We'll be back here tomorrow night, and we'll be able to assess his performance at that point. But
dead ass, I don't think he's going to do well in the debate.
All right. Mike gets the $5.
I'll Venmo you.
But hopefully you weren't just saying that so that you could use that word, because then if he does well, you're going to have to eat crow tomorrow. We'll see.
Nobody really holds me accountable for what I say on this. Nate, Claire, they get, you know, it's like what they say matters. I can just say whatever I want.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you, Galen.
Thank you, Claire.
I've got this thing and it's f***ing golden. I'm not just giving it up for f***ing nothing.
The great Blagojevich.
Rod Blagojevich, in reference to Barack Obama's Senate seat.
And thank you, Micah.
Thank you.
My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcast@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.